Did you ever catch your dog or your cat staring at you and think just for a moment that they were trying to talk to you? Maybe they are. Alan Schoen is a veterinarian and the author of Kindred Spirits, How the Remarkable Bond Between Humans and Animals Can Change the Way We Live. He says the lives of humans and animals are much more closely entwined than we think. His own life was changed forever by his dog, Megan.
Megan was one of my greatest teachers, and she was this golden retriever stray that a friend of mine brought to me that she was collapsing and coughing. And back then in New England, a dog with those signs usually ended up being diagnosed with heartworm disease. During the recovery stage, there's a six-week period where they need to be very quiet. And so I took her with me to make sure she was quiet. And I noticed she started watching me as I would minister to a cow or a lamb or a dog or a cat or a ferret, whatever. And after that period of time, she ended up coming with me on all my calls even after she recovered. And what I noticed was that she would go over to the person or the animal that needed the most love while I was administering my Western medicine. For instance, one cold winter blustery night in New Hampshire, where she and I were going over Temple Mountain to help deliver a calf with a cow that had milk fever. And we went into the classic old red barn with the cobwebs all over and went through, and there was a cow laying there with milk fever or calcium deficiency. Mm-hmm. And I went ahead and started doing a physical exam that administering fluids and everything. She immediately went over to the farmer's daughter who was there all crying because she was so attached to this one particular cow. And she started licking her tears, and she just started cuddling up to this little girl. Then once I started getting the cow stabilized and started delivering the calf, she ran over to the anxious cow and started licking her face. And then once the calf came out, she started licking the calf. And on the way back that night, I asked her, I said, "Megan, is this just your genetic, hereditary, maternal instinct being a golden retriever and female? Or have you consciously evolved to a different level where after watching me for so long, you've adapted to this?"
You've got a couple of things going on here. Megan seems to be an unusual animal, but unusual in both her empathy for other creatures and for her apparent understanding of what it is that you want.
Yes, here's one theory that I propose, okay, based on the latest research in brain development in animals and based on the latest research in what is called the molecules of emotion, where all the research had been done on animals but extrapolated to people. What I'm doing is bringing it back to the animals, that Megan, as an example, is one that saw many things that I was doing, incorporated them, learned them, and started exhibiting them, these behaviors, to help other animals. Now, some people would say, okay, she saw something, learned it, and it's all just learned behavior. And whether it's learned behavior, it's time to go beyond the concept of trying to differentiate between humans and animals where we can integrate it in a different way. There's so much evidence now that animals do have consciousness, that they do make choices based on their life experiences. And just like with us, the classic nature-nurture controversy, what part of who we are is our genes and what part is our environmental nurturing?
The learned behavior thing is almost understandable. It fits in with our notion of what is possible in the relationship between humans and animals. The more spiritual side of this thing is more difficult, I think, for us all to accept. But you had another example, a young boy who came in with a dog who had degenerative myelopathy?
Correct.
And it yes. seemed to be a direct connection between boy and dog.
It was interesting. You know, at one level, it's very understandable again. You know, the boy was suffering from Lyme disease that hadn't been properly diagnosed and then had to go on intravenous antibiotics. But during the time, he was in bed, just about paralyzed, debilitated from the Lyme disease, and the dog was slowly deteriorating with weakness too. So when they first came into my office, a very distraught mother was walking the dog in. Behind her, this dog was dragging his hind legs, and behind the dog was Scott on crutches from recovering from Lyme. And during that period of time, we were treating the dog, and it ended up, I didn't feel it had degenerative myelopathy. It had that as one component, but it also had arthritis in its hips and back, and ended up developing Lyme disease as well. So we were treating all these different things with a combination of conventional medicine, acupuncture, herbs, and we found that the dog, King, gradually recovered. And at the same time, Scott was gradually recovering. And what Scott noticed was when the dog would do worse, he would do worse. When he would do worse, the dog would do worse. And their recovery paralleled each other. Now, again, what happens is there's certainly an emotional connection. There's an impact of animals reading our feelings and us reading their feelings. But what I think happens beyond that is this connection goes so much deeper. I kept on hearing clients talking about this deeper connection, and my left brain scientific mind said, oh, it's just learned behavior. But over 20 years of veterinary practice, I started seeing whether I was treating a horse, a dog, a ferret, a lamb, whatever, clients wanted to talk about this feeling of a deeper connection with all of life. And finally, I started saying, hey, let's take a look at that. Let's see if what part we can explain scientifically based on known science and what part is a more, say, psycho-spiritual connection.
Can I ask you what the response of the veterinary community is to this kind of a feeling? I mean, this isn't something that you were taught in veterinary school to expect, was it?
Oh, definitely not. At that point, there was even people would question you if animals felt pain or not. There was still the model of Descartes to think, therefore I am. Now we've, as over the last 10 years with the great research showing that we have the same neurotransmitters, the same molecules of emotion, we have the same brain, it's all just differences in gradation. We're acknowledging that animals do feel pain, they do feel emotions, they do have thought. However, you know, again, veterinarians in general, we're trained very scientifically to only believe something if there's a double-blind study. But once you're in practice for a long time, you realize there's a lot that isn't documented, and lack of evidence does not mean lack of efficacy. And more veterinarians I find are wanting to talk about this. It's funny, whenever I teach at different veterinary schools or conferences, veterinarians will take me aside and say, hey, let's have lunch or let's have dinner. He goes, I'm so glad you're talking about this. This is something I feel, but we're scared to talk about it
being ridiculed. Can I just ask you a question? I mean, you've been a practicing vet for 20 years. Is there a chance, do you think, that having treated so many sick animals, you want this to be true and so you're seeing it?
I think the mind is a very powerful tool that can be used in many different ways. And yes, I think if one wants to be absolutely skeptical, that if you want to see a deeper connection, you can see it. But does that mean it's not there, or does that mean it's there? You know, it's kind of like someone who goes out and looks for a new dog, or say, goes and looks, thinking about purchasing a new car, and then all of a sudden you see it everywhere. It's this kind of epiphany or eureka moment that all of a sudden you're saying, oh my gosh, I see these connections, these communications everywhere. And it's kind of like also, we tend to be so species-centric that we demand that our animal friends speak English. But as soon as we start realizing that they're speaking to us in dog or horse or cat, and they're speaking with, you know, like cats have been documented to have over 25 vocalizations, and we start associating them with what they're talking about and their body language and everything like that, we realize, hey, we need to talk cat or dog or whatever. And once you start seeing these connections, it becomes self-evident. It's like what I'm finding is veterinarians, animal lovers, animal caretakers all over the place are recognizing that, hey, let's wake up. We're all talking together. We're all connected. We truly are all one. Why keep on trying to put these divisions between us?
There is a story in your book about the orcas who gave a kind of salute at the funeral of another whale. Can you tell us that story?
Yes. That story I throw in the book as a real stretch, saying, okay, you know, if we acknowledge that there's this mental connection, there's this emotional connection, there's this genetic connection, all of these. What about some deeper connections that we can't quite explain yet? And this was a story that takes place in the San Juan Islands between Seattle and Vancouver, where there are three pods of orca whales that are resident pods. They live there normally. And they've been studied by marine biologists there for over 30 years. And one of the whales, called Ralph, they know each whale by name and by markings and by number. And Ralph died at 42 years of age. And the marine biologists decided to give a memorial service at one of the parks on the island where the whales normally can be seen. But the pods hadn't been seen there for a while, and the pods only get together three or four times a year. They're not sure exactly why, if it's for interbreeding or whatever. But just as they were giving this memorial service, Ralph, who was the environmentalist that Ralph the whale was named after, Ralph was saying, let's have a moment of silence. And right at that very moment, all three pods showed up. And one after another, led by J pod, which was Ralph's pod, and Ralph's pod was led by a whale that was Ralph's sister. And one by one, they breached, leaping out of the water, and it was almost like this whale funeral procession. And these marine biologists or scientists, their jaws just dropped. And what I question there is, if that was a coincidence, what were the odds of that being a coincidence? If it wasn't a coincidence, then what was that?
I don't think we have an answer.
You know, once we start looking, it's, again, just a level of perception. Once we start looking at these connections, many animal behaviorists, many veterinarians I talk to say, you know, we see things like this all the time that we can't quite explain. But just because we can't find a scientific explanation right now does not mean that they don't exist.
Alan Schoen is the author of Kindred Spirits. He says animals help make us better people, and society should take that into account for a more compassionate 21st century.